This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
So on this day, I wanted to talk about the paramitas. Some traditions have 10 or 9. The Pali tradition does. And in the Mahayana tradition, there are 6. Generosity, morality, patience, effort, concentration, and then the manifestation of all of them, wisdom. So I was reading in the Bhagavad Gita recently, and it said something interesting that hadn't come up to me in anything I've studied in Buddhism. But it's talks about self-sacrifice and renunciation, that self-sacrifice, giving, and self-discipline should not be renounced, for they purify. Even these should be performed without desire for selfish rewards. True renunciation is giving up all desire for personal reward. Now, we have the paramita of generosity, which is giving of oneself. And I think that pretty much describes self-sacrifice as well. And of course, there's skillful self-sacrifice and unskillful self-sacrifice. And I'm sure there's a lot of philosophical discussion that could go around on the unhelpful self-sacrifice. And then there's the neutral sacrifice, like I would call a bunt, a batter bunts the ball to get someone from first to second, or second to third, or third to home, is a sacrifice that's perhaps more neutral, depending on which team you're rooting for, or neither team. But sacrifice is something that rarely comes up. It's usually we talk about compassion at heart, being generous in spirit. So sacrifice is self-sacrifice. What is there in our self to sacrifice? Or what is there of what we have, what we are, what we can give that is something we could sacrifice? Or is that a dualistic way of looking at the act of generosity? Perhaps fundamentally, if you can sacrifice thoroughly in a gesture, in a moment, and give all that you have, then all of it can be received, and there is complete transmission in that instant. So we each pick a place where we want to be and where we are. And this morning, each of us have picked this spot to be. Willfully, knowingly, unknowingly, obligingly, resentfully. We are here and so is it safe here? So to bring up the word safe also brings up a lot of darkness, I think. Just to even mention the word safe brings up unsafe. So what makes it safe here for us? How can we be safe here and yet fully sacrifice everything we've got to show up here? And I think it's pretty easy. Maybe. With our concentration, we can gaze forward with a gentle gaze, and in our meditation, maybe see a light, see a space, see a thread that is us right now. And that thread that we can see, witness, is seamless and it's continuous back to the beginning. If our life is seamlessly here from the beginning for each of us and all living things, I think it's true that we are not going from the life force does not go from inert to living to inert to living. It's the life force is continuous. And we get to taste it now, right here, right at this intersection of time and space. Our consciousness, too, is seamless, though we may not know it. But how could it be otherwise? I need Lance here to take the philosophical opposite here. So in this safe place where we can fully be ourselves and fully sacrifice ourselves, how fearlessly can we do it, and what are the limits of our ability, our action, our clean action of sacrifice? And that's where the paramitas are helpful, to remember generosity and effort and good concentration. It's important to remember these things in order that it's not our ego that is doing it. There's a recent circumstance of spiritually developed people welcoming an outsider into their group with whole heart, whole spirit, with kindness, with generosity, with fearlessness. And the one they welcomed was confused and ignorant and even wearing symbols of hate. And he, after an hour, committed this murder of these nine people. And yet they were in a safe place, they thought. And they sacrificed everything they had for that moment. And I hope I can bring my full life force to moments with such fearlessness too in these changing times. Our role here at Jokoji is to provide a place for people to gather and meditate and learn about themselves and the world. And it's important to welcome all here in whatever way they show up. If we can't do that, we're not fearless. We're not ready. It's been a sad week in Charleston and also in our country. And it's also been an inordinately joyful week and time in Charleston and our country. In I think the joy comes in the deep recognition of one's faith and one's community and the kindness that can exist and expound. So in moments in my practice, I would like to be, to provide, to share all that I've got without reservation to the moment. And of course, a lid fits its box when it's appropriately matched. And likewise, we meet the flow with total generosity and big heart. I saw Trungpa had said that it doesn't matter who, it doesn't matter what. We just meet the flow. So we meet the flow with our full energy. And what are the limits of influence? Can we be aware of that? Or maybe it's not necessary to be aware of the limits. But sometimes for some of us, like me, who does a lot of projects, I a lot of times don't know the extent of my limits, especially in the context of our community Zen practice of leave no trace. When you go prepare your evening meal and you're done, you leave no trace. I go off and dig 200 feet of trench and I leave a mess. I sometimes have a large footprint. And sometimes unknowingly large. So please help me know my limits if it annoys you, any of you. So that's what I've got for today. I'd like to hear what you think about sacrifice and safety and what else is on your mind. Thank you. Yes, Andy.
Very interested in what you're saying about safety. And I've thought a bit about it. And my question is you're talking about being fully here, being fully in the present, and a relationship with safety, I think. Is being fully here necessarily a safe experience? And is it necessary at times to abandon the notion of safety? And if so, how might one do that in the context of practice?
Well, I frequently abandon notions of safety just because it's not on my radar. That's one way to not think about it. But I think in most contexts, there are protocols of safety that it behooves us to remember them, like on construction projects or kitchen work, working with other people and moving materials. There are protocols of safety that are followed. But where are you thinking of giving up notion of safety? Or can it just dissolve as when you're in your safe place? It just, the whole notion of safety dissolves because you're there. What do you think?
Oh, what do I think? Yeah. Well, I think the question comes from, for me, sorry, the state of safety isn't working today. That's cool.
That's good.
You can be upright. It's okay.
This question comes from, for me, like, sometimes an experience of edge and leaning into that which is almost like unknown territory or a sense of kind of inner wilderness, the wildness, the unpredictability, not necessarily in my whole life, but like even on the cushion, like I don't necessarily feel safe. It's a strange territory. And safety to me seems like at times it could be an illusion. I can cling to it. And I'll feel anxious if I don't have my notion of what safety is. And that practice at times is expanding what I can accommodate.
Your comfort zone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Important to do that.
Does that become more a topic about fear rather than safety? It sounds to me more about your fear rather than safety.
Mm-hmm. Could be, could not be.
They're intertwined, aren't they? The fear and safety.
If you're not afraid of unsafe, then why care about safe?
So to be holding to a notion of safety, you're not able to be fearless. But maybe you're able to examine what the elements of safety, of what feels comfortable, what feels appropriate, what is familiar territory, what is unfamiliar. And be willing to trust that you can enter this unknown territory and make it back. And by exploring those limits, we actually have more resources. Ying.
Knowing you, I know you have a, I would say, a relatively unusual relationship with work, which is I've rarely seen someone who is so delighted and, you know, thinks of work as play and as a sort of a joyful giving of your energy. I'm wondering what you say with the people you work with, especially on the, you know, construction crews. There must be people who begrudge the work in some way and sees it as sacrifice in the negative sense of the word. How do you help them see it and feel whether it's inspired or motivated or generous, etc.?
I guess by being respectful to them and not having expectation of what they're doing and being respectful and curious are two things that bring people, no matter where they are with the relationship with work, actually to a more interesting place to be temporarily. So yeah, there are a lot of ways to share with people in an office or on a site or at a difficult circumstance. And it's hard sometimes to show up. It's hard to know what one can do or that it's even appropriate to be there. And yet often just to be present is enough. Be ready for the next moment where something might of interest show up so you can engage it. It's one of the things I appreciate about you is the boundless levels of curiosity. And it's contagious here. We have about 10 people that live here now, and it's a really good time for this place with the level of trust and curiosity about this practice, what we do, in an open way. We each come from many different paths to here, and I don't think anyone holds to their path as why can't they do it the right way? And some of us here go to prison and check with some prisoners, and there are some people there that are pretty adamant about what they feel is appropriate and should be done and talked about. And here we're in a very liberated zone. We have a difficult road to travel down here to Jikoji. It's a humbling road. We had one visitor here who had low wheel clearance and cracked an expensive fiberglass cowling and could not give up thinking about that during meditation. And we understood. Yes.
I was privileged to hear Mahala, the young woman who was shot by the Taliban on Friday, speak about sacrifice in her life. And so you touched her topic. And it occurred to me while I was listening to her that that was a long journey her family took of accepting the lack of safety before she became a celebrity, an international celebrity. And the mother, who had 4 months of education, spoke to her child from the beginning that it was her duty to be a voice. And when the conversation came about the unsafety, it came back to that moment and the movement of that moment, not about the future, but just what needed to be done in that moment. And she raised this beautiful child.
There are a lot of different warriors. And she's one. Yes, Joe.
It seems like when we think about safety, we think about it in terms of survivability, or that we won't be hurt. But I mean, one thing I learned, you know, when I came here, I wanted to feel safe by knowing I was going to be all right. But in the end, in order to grow, it was that me that was clinging that actually wasn't all right. hopefully as I grow, I'm wondering about vulnerability. You know, what's the relationship between vulnerability and safety? Because that's always a question. I always want to know I'm going to be all right, but then I have to not be all right.
Have you ever not been all right?
Oh, yeah.
In unsafe circumstances.
Yeah.
So you can see the conditions as they're brewing, and maybe get a sense of whether it's safe or not. Don't you get a sense of the conditions of the circumstances, and from just those indicators show up of what's coming? Or are they pretty blind when they hit you? Are you pretty blind when they hit?
Both.
Wow, what an opportunity. So How did you navigate through to a place of safety? Was it present in that moment, or was it not present?
You know, I'm not sure I ever found it. That magical place where I would be okay, where I would be safe.
Are you safe here, right now?
That depends on who I is. Part of me will not leave here. Part of me will.
How do you mean?
There's always something that thinks it knows. There's always something I need to be like this in order for that. And then it turns out that needs to let go of this.
So does the thinking part, is that the part that will never leave this place? Or is that the part that does leave occasionally?
It leaves occasionally. It'd be nice if it just stayed here when I left.
If that were possible, these walls would be inches thick with debris, with our thoughts left on the wall.
Maybe that's what they are.
Yes.
Thank you so much for what you just shared, Joe. It's really, very moving. You mentioned the event in Charleston last week, and you know, in terms of the idea of safety, I feel like we all have the power to help make our world a safer place for everybody. But I feel like in order for there to be a sense of safety, I feel like it sometimes needs to be acknowledged that the world is a safer place for some people than it is for others. It's not as safe to be a person of color, sometimes physically, sometimes emotionally. And I wonder if you could speak to that. That sometimes, I think that is sometimes the divide, that there's an assumption that this issue of safety might be different for different people.
Very true. It's hard for me to fully understand all that, being a tall, white, American guy. Because we're entitled to so much in some of our opinions. So as far as safety goes for those who are potentially not safe, I actually have a radar for that sometimes and do what I can. And I think other people do that as well. When you know someone near you, around you, needs something, that you can then step forward and sacrifice in that moment to give all you can to them in that moment. And of course, this also comes back to notions of host and guest, in that when helping another, are you a host to them and they're the guest and they need to behave properly and receive your gift in the proper way? Or are they the host and you are the guest bringing an offering to them? And it's all we can do is do it as skillfully as we can with and without attachment to, without attachment to it. But these, as far as your point of people of people of color that it is often not safe in very many places for them, where it's pretty safe for me. I have never stopped driving while white. Well, I've been speeding, so I've been caught. But that's not while white. And yet they talk about people of color, boys of color being, like half of them being stopped, at least stopped, if not arrested. And none of that is safe. So a place of worship is generally considered a place of safety for them. They those are the bastions of safety, and even in those bastions of safety, the walls are not tall, and intruders can come in and slaughter. And yet, the strength of that well is beyond my comprehension. Because we're in this idyllic spot. Where the bells quietly ring to let us know what we can do. What can we do, Andy?
We can have lunch.
Are there any other comments or questions? Yes.
It seems like there's degrees of what you're talking about, safety and fear. One of the things that I realized long ago is I'm turning to the wall and I have no idea what's happening behind me. But then today there was this mosquito. So that's the unique situation this artificial environment allows me to do, is to, in a way, meet the mosquito and this fear, I suppose, but my safety is being violated a little because it's going into this hypodermic needle going into me. But it's also very unique, as happened before, flies and spiders, one of the great unique situations of this place, where I just allow that to be. It's really not that bad. Yeah. But only really here, it seems like, that I get to go to the depth of something like that.
You have an army of fly swatters in the other places where you are that keep you safe?
Apparently on the second shelf in the men's bathroom, there's off for insects. So I did that because of comfort, I suppose. But in some ways, I missed that opportunity again by giving up this idea, because in some ways it is not much of it is in my mind.
The notion of what's safe or unsafe is just a notion in your mind.
Fear. It's been underscored in many of the sutras here. Fear.
Yeah.
What's going to happen? I'm going to get a welt, or I'm going to get AIDS or something, because this hypodermic will find me. Or this fly is buzzing in my ear. But then it's really, this is great. I've seen it before with people who've got great tragedies, you know, breaking necks. People that, there's this opportunity in a way of meeting it and at least maybe temporarily, at least transitioning. It's really not so bad as I think it is.
It's important to stretch that, to examine what's going on with that mosquito and be willing to let it suck you dry.
in some ways I've found, maybe because of my nature, the physical part seems a little bit easier for me, but I come across this particular sentence that Jana brought out about, isn't most talk a crazed defense of a crumbling fort?
A crazed defense?
Of a crumbling fort. That safety, that fear of words just baffles me how I become quite incredibly fearful. I feel it in my body more than that mosquito. And that is a big part of my opportunity, because there is a lot of violence, a lot of hostility in the word. Yeah, unfathomable, it seems like to me. And yet, great opportunity to confront fear and safety in this ego. I gather this crumbling fort is a metaphor, I think, of ego.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks. The levels of fear, the levels of angst that can arise with triggering of words can be very debilitating, and meditation may not it may be difficult. So there are ways to learn to concentrate. That's one of the fifth paramita is concentration, meditative concentration, and it's something we can only do for a brief period of time before our mind gets buzzed with some low-flying thoughts that take us to new places.
I guess I want to say, to me at least, the physical encounter of meeting actually does transcend into this more metaphysical abstract of words. This is one of the greatest virtues I find in sitting, is I get to feel it physically, but then I relate it to things as abstract as sounds coming out of somebody's mouth. Daggers. It's very, very helpful for me to make the body-mind connection.
That's beautiful. This full body connection is... to be with that, that's where I think the fearlessness is in that full body experience and not in the thoughts around it. It's just in the bringing everything you got to right now, this full body, the five skandhas, everything. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.